Hello, thanks for joining us with The Thing About Cars. I am Mickey Desai, one of your hosts. I am lucky to have around the table today, Becca, are you with us?
I'm with you.
And Dawn, are you there?
Hello, everyone.
And you can't hear her, but Jessica is hiding out in the margins somewhere. Jessica is going to be helping us out with our social media agenda. So if she feels like popping on to say hi, she's welcome. Otherwise, just wave at Jessica. She's new. There she is. Thanks, Jessica. Let's get started today with our moment of Grand Trivia Auto. The advertising for what 70s personal luxury car boasted interiors of rich Corinthian leather?
Oh, no. I cannot believe you asked that question. My husband and I were just talking about what the heck is Corinthian leather?
There's a whole story behind that.
I know
that. Have you guys been watching Deadpool?
Yes.
Ooh, wrench Corinthian leather.
So our choices are, and we'll answer the question at the end of the episode as always. The choices are, was the car that had the rich Corinthian leather, was that the Lincoln Continental Mark IV? Was it the Chrysler Cordoba? Was it the Ford Thunderbird? Or was it a Cadillac Eldorado? So we'll come back.
Say that one more time, but I do know the answer to this. I'm so excited because I have a story. But tell us the question.
So the choices are, the question is, the advertising for what 70s personal luxury car boasted interiors of rich Corinthian leather? Was it the Lincoln Continental Mark IV? Was it the Chrysler Cordoba? Was it the Ford Thunderbird or the Cadillac Eldorado? And I should probably mention for our audience today too, this thing has nothing to do with trivia, but it is the 4th of July. So happy United States Independence Day, you guys.
Yay.
Yes.
I can hear the fireworks happening outside my window already, and it's not even 5 p.m. on July 4th yet.
Oh, I heard it last night in my neighborhood. Right now I just hear thunder.
Yeah, I've just been hearing it for days. So, but what's on your mind today? What shall we talk about with The Thing About Cars? I've got a short list, but we didn't compile it at the beginning. So Dawn, what's on your plate?
Well, actually, it kind of leads off of your trivia question, because I read this week that we will have the last roll off of the production of the Lincoln Continental.
Yeah.
And all of those 70s, 80s luxury cars are, they've morphed, quite frankly, from the Continental to the Town Car to now the MKS and that Ford lineup. But I am just thinking in my brain, oh my gosh, what is Mr. Big going to ride in? How can you get rid of the Continental and the Town Car and go to these, there's something about those cars, the 70s and the 80s, that just screamed, really like you said, rich Corinthian leather. Like it was a faux luxury experience.
And, right.
Well, and I just, I'm my heart is breaking.
I heard, when the decision was made, in fact, I think Ford announced that the decision was made some years ago that they were going to kill the line. And now, of course, it's finally coming to an end. And the article I read some years ago was, what is the black car industry going to do anymore? Because the Crown Vic is gone. The Lincoln Continental is gone. A lot of the formerly larger black cars for the, black fleet service industry has gone away. And I thought, we're kind of overreacting. I mean, it's not as if you're going to, go to the airport and get picked up by someone in a Volkswagen.
No. Yeah. I mean, and like I said, they've introduced the MKS. A lot of them, it's the SUV. It's either the Navigator, or a Mercedes. Like I have a GL. Yeah. It's they've gone because people aren't just traveling by themselves, which is I'll never forget. I was in New York City and I was, trying to figure out where to go. And the concierge said, well, let me get you a car, Mrs. Randolph. And I was like, oh, how sweet is that? And it was just a really dark, lovely with the black windows, Lincoln Town Car. And I was like, oh, yeah. This is so cool.
Yeah.
Well, and I was going to say, I'm still kind of surprised that they're still around at all. Honestly, usually what you do see, regardless if you're 1 or 10, well, 10 might change it, you get more of the Lincoln Navigators kind of thing, the SUVs, the luxury SUVs showing up, just because the idea of what is a luxury car has shifted so much. Our parents' generation was more into the Cadillac, you know, the big, long sedan-type Continentals and things like that. It's just a shift in what is seen as luxury or nice or things like that. And I'm kind of surprised there were still any around.
Yeah, it's very fascinating. We have good friends that own a limo company. And when they moved over to the MKS and the first time I rode in one of theirs, I was like, this is like a hybrid. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I'm like, this is a crossover. Like, this is, what is this? You know, and it's not the same. But again, different generations.
Yeah. No, there is something to be said for a good old fashioned, just, you know, there's a word I'm looking for and I can't think of it. But, you know, that kind of old sedan, very old school, large, and that yacht, that floating yacht experience just doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, we started calling them hoopties.
Yeah, well, no, that's different too. That's different.
Well, it's when they're kind of falling apart. But yeah, no, yeah. I mean, I grew up with, my dad always had Cadillacs, the big old, you know, Cadillacs, and it would have its bells and whistles, and I grew up with it, and they have a nostalgic place in my heart, but I never ever want to drive one. It's just something. Yeah, it feels like driving a land yacht.
Yeah. A boat. Yeah, yacht. That's it. That's what we used to call them, land yachts.
Right. Yeah. So, in other news related to cars that are going away, Fiat Chrysler announced that they're no longer going to produce the Dodge Journey or the Grand Caravan minivan.
Oh, I know somebody with a Journey.
I don't blame them. I would not drive that Journey. We had tested it a million times. I do not like that car.
No, I mean, I'm surprised the Journey ever went to production to begin with. So clearly, I think a marketing focus group led them wrong when they said, oh yeah, we love that thing. I think they were lying. But the big news is the minivan, the Grand Caravan minivan is gone. That thing is a
actually bye-bye.
It's a huge part of automotive history. You know, it captured the market in the 80s with a design that the world had never seen before.
And yes. That's true.
But
that's
in its defense, what was it? I don't think it was a Caravan. Oh, I'm going to have a brain fart. My family and I had rented one of their minivan, what have you, with all these bells and whistles for one of our drives up to Michigan. And it was very nice. I mean, for what it was very nice. You know how I feel about minivans, though. Mm-hmm. And I think I've made comments about it before. It was not a bad car. If I liked minivans, I probably would have liked it. And I've got a friend that he absolutely loves his Journey. And I said he, by the way. He loves his Journey.
Well, good for him, because we have had Dodge Durangos. They are the workhorse of our family.
Well, he wants one of those really bad.
Right? And they're, as a matter of fact, I was looking at one with specs last night. You know, the entry to those, to 2020, is like $31,000.
Good grief.
I know. So that's why I think it's really fascinating that you get rid of this, the Journey and the Caravan, you get rid of a very big price point.
Yeah.
So what it, you know, what does a family look for?
And in because Dodge's there's no case, right. In Dodge's case, that's a good question, because if I read this correctly, in 2021, they will only be selling a Dodge Charger, a Dodge Challenger, and the Durango.
That's it?
That's it.
Three car lineup.
They don't have any crossovers at all.
Mm-mm. Nope.
You know, I think we had touched on this before, actually.
Chrysler had done something similar. Chrysler, I think Chrysler's line has diminished all the way to the 300 at Pacifica and something else. I can't remember what the other thing is. But
I wonder if any of this has to do with, you know, that was the other thing as I was trying to build this Dodge Durango last night to see what the price point was. If people, you know, you think, oh, if I go into the dealership, I can negotiate or haggle. But if you just a la carte it and put it together online and build it and order it, there's no, you get what you get.
Mm-hmm. Buy it, they will come. Or build it. Yeah. Dang it, I've totally messed up that one.
No, I mean, but then they're getting their full MSRP.
I'm thinking that the manufacturers, I mean, even going all the way out to Nissan and their issues and all that, I'm having this visual image of them being like a squirrel in a road and not knowing which way to go. I don't know if it's the market research is coming back fluky. I don't know if the newer generations are just unpredictable or what's going on. The problem may be that they just can't figure out which way is the right way, and whichever way they plan seems to be the wrong way.
Well, remember, I think before the pandemic hit, people were Ubering and they were, you know, Lyfting. And so if they were looking at vehicles, they were thinking, oh, I'll just rent one because now I can get everywhere I need to go, even if I'm on the fringes of downtown. Like if you're in the inner burbs, not the exurbs, but the, you know, the true suburban inside perimeters of different cities, hey, I'll take an Uber. Why do I need a car anymore? So maybe that's why.
Well, not everywhere is like Atlanta. And the way that Atlanta has the metro Atlanta area is quite different from most other cities. So I can see how that would be a metro city issue possibly, especially with newer generations preferring to do the Lyfts and Ubers like you were saying. But so many other places aren't like that.
Nope.
It's just, I don't know.
So it's going to be interesting what these lineups look like. And
right.
And how many of the older vehicles, that's another question, is who will be looking to find used vehicles from, I know people, is it the Honda Pilot that's also not being made anymore?
Really?
I think
they are discontinuing it, but it was never, it hasn't been a good seller for Honda in a while.
Ah, okay. So yeah, interesting.
I was by a Ridgeline the other day and I was like, oh, I forgot about those things.
Yeah.
The pickup truck.
Is that the Toyota?
Pickup truck by Honda.
It's a Honda Ridgeline. Yeah. Okay. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Oh yeah. That was a very interesting looking.
Took me a second to reel. I was like, wait, that car looks funny. Oh, yeah, I remember. I forgot about those.
Mm-hmm.
We ask, as we always do, for listener questions or things that we may talk about on the show. And our friend Tim wrote in a question that I thought we should go over. And I'm trying to find the question. I mean, I know the question, but I want to ask it the way that he phrased it. And he says, and we've touched on some of these things before, but I think it's kind of funny to revisit again. Tim asks, name the most, in hindsight, unfortunate and embarrassing or suggestive car names in history. And this is where that discussion comes up. And so he says things like the Ford Probe. The name had tested really poorly with women, but they went with it anyway. Or the Pontiac Vibe. And Tim says, was there a sister version called the Oldsmobile Dildo?
Okay, but Vibe being separate from Vibrate.
Sure. Yeah. Well, let me tell you what. I had a Ford Probe. I loved that car. If it wasn't for the doggone engine, that was the fun car. It was my first car I ever bought with my own money. I bought it off my uncle, both of my uncles are totally into cars, and he refurbished it. So I went up to Pennsylvania to pick it up. There's a long story about that. And I didn't even have that car a year, and the engine, I think the pistons blew. And I had to have the engine, a rebuilt engine, put in that car. But I actually drove it almost a decade.
Well, yeah. Out of curiosity, I had test driven one because originally, I don't know how many people know, the Ford Probe was slated to replace the Mustang. 1993 had originally been designated as the final year of the Ford Mustang. And I had gone out and test driven one just to see. I was already thoroughly upset for many, many reasons, but I had gone out to test drive one. And if you remove the factor of this is the future Mustang, you remove the name and everything, it wasn't a bad car. It was sporty. It had some features. It was no replacement for a muscle car. It was nowhere near what a muscle car enthusiast would expect at all.
It was sleek. It was a sleek car. I loved that car. Like I said, if it wasn't for the engine, and even then I got a rebuilt engine, stuck it in there and drove it another 9 years.
Yeah. Aside from everything, if you removed all the stigmas that had been attached to it, it was not a bad car. However, yeah, the name was tragic and the idea of it being a Mustang replacement was not good.
So we're completely missing
your question.
We've completely departed Tim's question.
So, well, I can't think of any other names to throw out there anyways.
Well, before I was so rudely interrupted, I was going to say, there's another one, another question, another name was the Chevy Nova, which means no go in Spanish. What other poorly named cars have there been on the market? But now we've screwed the pooch on that. So let's just talk about probes again.
Well, what other names can you think of? And I've actually heard people say that the Nova joke is really only funny here, that it's not as we perceived it. I don't remember what somebody told me, but I don't recall. But it was apparently an urban legend that wasn't entirely accurate.
No, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, Chevy can, and has, in fact, named the car one thing for one market and another for another market. And a Nova in English still means, like, you know, a stellar phenomenon, right? Something that you would see in the nighttime sky.
Champagne supernova.
Sam, my husband and I always laugh at the Pinto.
It's a horse.
But it's still, like, when you think about it, it's just the Pinto. I don't know. There was the Chevy Sprint.
Yeah, which that's true.
Owned, and that was like, it really was a Sprint. I think it was a 3-cylinder. You had to, like, you know, he's not in the room, so thank goodness, but he loved that car. It was the first car he ever bought with his own paycheck. And it was hard when we had to finally limp it to a place to sell it. Oh my gosh, he loved that Sprint.
I honestly am drawing a blank on what other funny car names that are there.
What about Esprit? Isn't that a candy?
I don't know. Where's Ben when we need him to talk about unfortunately named cars?
We've done something like this before, and I cannot remember any names, but yeah, Ford has a tendency, as far as the Pinot goes, to name things after horses. Although, trivia here, the Mustang is not actually named after a horse.
Right.
It's named after the P-52.
It's named after a plane, that's right.
Yes. Ah.
So because we have the internet, I have actually pulled up a list of poorly named cars, unfortunately named car names. And this is from Thrill List, an article that was actually written back in 2015 by a fellow named Aaron Miller. I'm going to read these in descending order, right?
And then we've got to get to our trivia before time's
up. Yeah, we've got 4 minutes left, so I'll make this fast. The top of the list is the Dodge Dart Swinger. Number two is the Studebaker Dictator, which was unveiled in 1927. Then, of course, the Ford Probe. Then the Suzuki / Daihatsu Scat.
I forgot about the Scat.
Seems wrong. This list contains the Chevy Nova, then the Ford Escort. Apparently, the Escort can be taken many different ways.
Should we tell people, if they don't know, that animal poop is called Scat?
I think they'll figure it out.
I don't know. I'm not going to assume.
So Ford Escort is a poorly chosen name, apparently.
The Ford Ho.
The Buick LaCrosse. LaCrosse is a term used among Quebecois teenagers to mean, well, to please yourself. So, I'm censoring in a big way. I'm going to scoot down this list. There was something called the Renault Wind. And then, of course,
break your wind.
Right, right. The one obvious one that's staring me in the face here is the Hummer. Right. So, okay, let's wrap up our trivia question for the day, just because we're going to run out of time if we don't. And the advertising for what the grand trivia auto question for today is, the advertising for what 70s luxury personal car boasted interiors of rich Corinthian leather? We've got 2 minutes left. Was it the Lincoln Continental Mark IV? Was it the Chrysler Cordoba? Was it the Ford Thunderbird? Or was it the Cadillac Eldorado? Dawn says she knows the answer. So, Becca, quickly, what do you got?
Damn it, I was going to say, let Dawn go first. I don't know. Okay, Cadillac, I don't know.
Cadillac. Dawn, what do you got?
Oh, it is the wonderful Chrysler Cordoba. Corinthian leather.
So when Ricardo Montalban was paid to do the ad, he looked at the script and the script originally just said, you know, with leather seats. And he's like, there's no way that's going to work. Let me embellish this. And so he's the one who simply made up Corinthian leather. There is actually no such thing as Corinthian leather. He made it up right there on the spot.
Well, it is hilarious.
It is the first car. I borrowed it from my roommate and I wrecked it.
Oh, man.
Oh. First car I ever drove in the States after coming back from Germany, living there, driving really amazing cars. It was an icy afternoon, picked her up from the airport at Penn State, went around the corner, and that we just literally did like 360 several times, hit a tree, almost fell off an embankment. Yeah.
Let's say goodbye, everybody. We've got less than 30 seconds to go. So thanks for joining us for this episode of The Thing About Cars. We'll see you again with another episode in about a week. See ya.
Thanks. See ya, bye.
Just a quick word that Eric Benjamin is the sponsor of this episode of The Thing About Cars. Eric is a realtor here in Atlanta. I've never seen anyone do real estate the way Eric does real estate. He brings a common sense approach to his work. His biggest strength is that he takes the time to listen to his clients and make sure he understands them. It's very odd to hear a realtor say it, but Eric will tell you that he doesn't actually sell anything. He consults, he educates, he's faithful in his representation, and he'll remain your ally throughout the entire home buying process. Please don't hesitate to give Eric a shout if you ever need real estate services of any kind, buying or selling. Just search for Eric Benjamin with Keller Williams First Atlanta, or call or text Eric at 404-277-1122.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.